Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith.
Usually these things are timed politically with great precision. I don't think it's an accident, really, that these raids are coming just a week before the massive October 2nd march on Washington, a march which is focused on jobs and other social justice issues.
Chris Gavro is an organizer with Connecticut United for Peace. She is one of many people who are now outraged about a series of FBI raids on a wide variety of peace groups. This even as the FBI was going through a review by the Justice Department of this very kind of activity. The arrests are politically timed, according to Chris Gavro. She joins us from her home in Connecticut to talk about the arrests, as protests have been held in many states and are being organized in others. Chris Gavro, welcome.
Hi, Dori.
Now, Chris, just to review, the Department of Justice has issued a report criticizing the FBI for spying on peace groups, environmentalists, and others, and for labeling them terror investigations. You know, the targeting of these groups, arrests, something that the report has called unreasonable and inconsistent with FBI policy. The groups under discussion have included the Thomas Merton Center, the Quakers, the Catholic Worker, groups in support of Palestinian rights, Greenpeace, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and individual activists, labor unionists. Just tell us which groups have been targeted more recently and where.
In Chicago, leading activists Joe Eisenbacher and his partner Stephanie Weiner, their house was raided and they were issued subpoenas. An important Arab American activist in Chicago was also issued in a subpoena.
It looks like the person you're mentioning here is Hatem Abudaya, the executive director of the Arab American Action Network. Can you say anything more about him specifically?
I don't have any additional information about him, but activists that I know in Chicago, you know, have told me he's a leading Palestinian activist in the city of Chicago. In Minnesota, in Minneapolis, prominent anti-war committee member Meredith Abbey, activist Sarah Martin from Women Against Military Madness, and a range of others were the victims of these raids. A number of these people were also members of unions, and a number of them were members of a group called the Freedom Road Socialist Organization. And it seems to be an attempt by the government to try to divide and conquer the anti-war movement, singling out activists who also did solidarity work with working people in Palestine and Colombia as a way to somehow divide, threaten, scare anti-war activists, that there could be some people among them who, you know, have associations with terrorist groups. But this is a total lie. These people are guilty of no crime. Activists have known them for decades, and they're hardworking unionists and effective anti-war organizers whose crime, really, in the eyes of the U.S. government, is organizing international solidarity. They have been subpoenaed to appear before grand juries beginning on October 5th. This is a highly dangerous situation. Historically, the government has used grand juries as fishing expeditions to look for things that they can use to charge activists with crimes, to create a climate of fear and intimidation for the movement as a whole.
And so we're looking at sort of McCarthy-esque raids where then it becomes guilt by association and everyone's frightened that their name will be mentioned. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. They emptied the houses of these activists with decades of files, cell phones full of phone numbers, computers full of email addresses, and presumably they will be looking for further names.
And what should someone do if this happens to them, or if they fear it might happen to them because of all of this? Who can they call that you can mention?
Well, the first thing everyone should know, and you can learn exactly how to respond by visiting the websites of the National Lawyers Guild, the Center for Constitutional Rights, is that you are under no obligation to speak to an FBI officer. If an FBI officer appears at your door, basically, you're legally allowed to close the door. If they have no search warrant, you are under no obligation to submit to an interview. You simply say, I do not consent to an interview, and close the door. Anything that you say to an FBI agent who arrives at your door can be used in a court of law against you, and they're very skilled, particularly when they're trying to use the FBI as a political weapon against anti-war activists. You don't really know their intent. You don't really understand. You don't know the whole picture, why they're asking you what they're asking you. So every legal authority advises you to remain silent. So the most important thing to know is you don't have to speak to anyone. If you're approached, call a lawyer, get involved with this committee, the Stop FBI, let people know that this is happening so that you can be supported and your case can be folded into the national campaigns.
Well, as you know, Chris, Colleen Rowley has been speaking out about these arrests. She's the former FBI agent turned whistleblower and the Democratic Farmer Labor Party candidate for Congress in Minnesota, who has been saying, and I want to quote her here, in 2008, we found out through a Freedom of Information request that there are 300 pages of, and she says she thought it was four or five or even six agents, trailing a group of students in Iowa City to parks, libraries, bars, and restaurants. And they even went through their trash. Chris Gavreau, very serious matter. And, you know, we see a lot of student groups on campus, a lot of peace groups, a lot of organized efforts to change policy. Why are these people being targeted?
Well, the truth is that the government is waging an illegal war, an unpopular war, and an unjustifiable war. They don't have good arguments in defense of these military interventions. So silencing the critics, stifling the discourse, is a natural response if you're carrying out something that the American people are disgusted with and is highly unpopular. The fact that there is a lot of criticism and there has been exposure of illegal surveillance is very good for the current victims of these recent raids. It should give us confidence that if we raise hell, we can push back the government. I view this as a probe to see if they can divide and conquer the anti-war movement, and a vigorous response is the only way, the only political solution. It's the only way that we can save and preserve the space for political dissent. So we have to fight back openly and vigorously. Keeping quiet will not work, and will only encourage them to expand their dragnet. I believe that just as these activists who were the victims of the raid in Minnesota and Chicago were on the right track. They were linking the struggles of working people in their unions, in their towns, with the fight against U.S. interventions. The trillions that are spent on the war are the key to providing support for working people in this crisis. We already supported the banks, but there has been just a tiny, tiny inadequate amount of funds contributed toward anything that could conceivably result in ending of the jobless pressure upon working people. So I believe that what it takes is just the vision that we can create a massive movement. People will fight back if we show leadership and provide space for them to become involved in planning out mass actions, independent political action of all kinds to demand what we need in terms of ending the war and a massive public works program to provide jobs.
And when you first heard about this, what ran through your mind?
Well, I immediately thought of the 1970s in COINTELPRO, where anti-war groups and other activist groups were the target of, you know, a long period of surveillance, dirty tricks, provocateurs, and all kinds of government efforts to intimidate people and convince them through the means of instilling fear not to organize against the war.
The Merton Center had complained about so many of the details here, you know, about being treated as if they were terror suspects. you know, when in fact they're waging peace, trying to bring about a peaceful resolution, which involves listening to both sides in an argument, and that's how you end a war, right?
Well, sure. I mean, we all value the work of the Merton Center very highly, and I think that we just have to begin to understand that the government has gotten so used to throwing around the charge of terrorism as a justification for its military interventions abroad that it seems to come very naturally to them to accuse those who do international solidarity with working people abroad or are somehow critical of the nature of U.S. interventions. It seems normal to them to accuse those folks of somehow aiding and abetting terrorism. But, of course, the anti-war movement has been deconstructing the way the government uses that term since before the invasion of Afghanistan.
Isn't this kind of the worst-case scenario that activists envisioned when they were first looking at Bush-Cheney laws, you know, the Patriot Act?
Well, sure. This is a very serious intervention. We have experience from the 1970s with the use of government grand juries. The whole experience of the movement is that these grand juries are big fishing expeditions. They can legally ask for all kinds of materials. They have very broad powers to request all kinds of materials from all kinds of periods of time. And the very nature of a grand jury is such that they can ask people to talk about anything they want. And the penalty for not speaking can be jail time. It's a stacked deck in the sense that it's designed to facilitate surveillance and intimidation rather than arriving at justice.
Just talk about the fact that the activities of the FBI have been under investigation by the Department of Justice, and a report's been issued. You know, they've been examining thousands of pages.
Well, yes, and many people noted that these recent raids, the ones that just happened last week, six houses were raided by the FBI at the crack of dawn in Minnesota, Chicago, and 14 people were presented with subpoenas, told that the charges were being investigated were material support to terrorism. These raids came just days after the report being critical of the surveillance and harassment of the folks in Pennsylvania at the Merton Center and other locations. But of course, it's curious and seemingly contradictory, but I think we know from experience that a raid of this magnitude, which clearly came out of the Chicago prosecutor's office, must have very high authority to be carried out. I think maybe we're just kind of witnessing a hard cop, soft cop routine or some attempt at obfuscation.
Well, hypothetically, could they have been trying to get these arrests and these confiscations of information from peace activists in before they could no longer do so?
Well, Dory, I think usually these things, you may be right, but I think usually these things are timed politically with great precision. I don't think it's an accident, really, that these raids are coming just a week before the massive October 2nd march on Washington, a march which is focused on jobs and other social justice issues, but which promises to put in motion hundreds of thousands of working people, empower them, give them a sense of confidence in their ability to impact politics. And, of course, anti-war organizations have been going out of their way to use that event to make connections between the fight for jobs and economic security and the stupendous amount of money being wasted or used criminally in U.S. interventions abroad. And, you know, these recent raids involved people who were not just anti-war activists in Chicago and Minnesota, but the vast majority of them were trade unionists who'd worked for decades trying to bring together the fight against the war with the fight for economic justice. And I think maybe that's the message the government wanted to send, their fear, or maybe they didn't want to send this message, but it does, to me, communicate their fear of a potentially really massive movement that would fight against the economic attacks and understand the relationship of those attacks to the really ever-expanding and seemingly endless U.S. interventions abroad.
You're listening to Talk Nation Radio. I'm Dori Smith, and we're speaking with Chris Gavro of CUTA, Connecticut United for Peace. She's also a member of Connecticut Socialist Action and one of many peace activists representing groups in Connecticut that are speaking out against the FBI raids on peace activists like Jess Sudden of Minneapolis and Joe Eisbacher of Chicago, a steward for SEIU Local 73 Chicago. Now, he helped organize buses to protests of the RNC convention of 2008, where many people were arrested. Chris Gavro, since we are entering another election period, we wanted to play some clips from Noam Chomsky's interview on Point Radio. This is an NPR program out of Boston, and a bit of what he had to say about the two-party system, about the Tea Party, and voters who are being misinformed and can't even vote their own self-interests right now.
What they're hearing is everything, every institution is rotten. The government doesn't do anything for us. The corporations don't. The parties aren't doing anything, actually. Antagonism toward the Republican Party is even higher than toward the Democrats. Congress should be thrown out and started over again. They have resentment against professions. They don't believe scientists. Everything isn't working. That's what they hear from the Tea Party movement. They don't hear anything constructive. But it does, and the trouble is they're not hearing anything constructive from anyone else. So the Democrats are not telling them, look, we understand your problem, and it's because of the financialization of the economy, which we supported and we created.
Wall Street centric.
Okay, mm-hmm. So they're not going to tell them that.
Now, Chomsky telling Tom Ashbrook of On Point that listeners shouldn't criticize the Tea Partiers if they're organizers and either left or more moderate Democrats, but should help organize them, and pull together a coalition.
The real question is who's responding in whatever way they are to those kind of what amount to cries for help. And those people should not be ridiculed. They should be organized. They should be the kind of people who in the 1930s, under somewhat similar conditions, reacted in a very constructive way and compelled the government to institute the New Deal measures, which were not superb, but they did save the country from a very serious crisis.
Here you are, Chris Gavro, making a fiery speech at a meeting of peace groups.
What does it mean to make an anti-war coalition, an anti-war alliance? We'll talk about what it means in Congress. But on the street, what does it mean? We would have a demonstration. What's a united front? You take the leaders of the coalitions and you put them on a stage. Does anyone actually think that if we put Patrick Buchanan on the stage, that any immigrant worker would come to a demonstration, that any unionist would come to a demonstration? These people pose an existential threat to our very ability to organize in this country. They want to get rid of public education, but we want to organize a fight for education, not war.
Chris Gavro, Chomsky not talking about reaching out to demagogues, but to individual people who are concerned about government and concerned about leaders.
I think that Noam Chomsky's been very observant and very sophisticated in his observations about the current political situation. The fact is we are, for most working people, we're not in a recession, we're actually in a Great Depression. The unemployment rates among the lowest paid workers are astronomical, 20%, 1 in 5. And the safety nets are gone, and the safety nets that people had from a traditional family structure in the 30s are gone. So people are really suffering, and we've had not much leadership from the organized labor movement. In fact, they have pretty much up to this point not begun to mobilize their membership or try to create a big social movement to defend the interests of working people. So Chomsky's right that that must happen. And I believe that he's right that anti-war activists must find a way to link up with those deeply felt needs of the vast majority. We need a movement of the majority if we are to end these interventions. And I believe we can build a movement of the majority as long as we point out the links between the cuts in social services, the refusal of the government to implement a serious public works program and jobs program, and the trillions spent on the war. I think that orientation is critical for the future anti-war movement. There have been, of course, alternate suggestions about strategy. Some anti-war strategists have urged a, quote, right-left coalition where opponents of war from the far and libertarian right should be sought out as key allies. People are thrilled with the idea of a congressional alliance to cut military spending. There's an initiative by Barney Frank and Ron Paul, for example, that has attracted the interest of activists. But I feel that the audience we need to be thinking about is that vast majority of working people suffering these huge rates of unemployment, sections of which are especially victimized, including immigrant workers, the black community, which is suffering rates of incarceration that are very difficult to believe, and other sections that have been especially victimized. And to build that kind of movement of the vast majority, we need to reject the racist and xenophobic elite baiting of the far right and instead throw our lot in with the needs of the vast majority.
Chris Gavreau, tell us about the response of the wider peace and justice community in Connecticut to these FBI raids.
Well, I see the whole movement nationally coming together very quickly, recognizing the seriousness of this attack and expressing determination to push this back. Yesterday, there were demonstrations, I think, in 35 cities coordinated around the country. Here in Connecticut, for example, dozens of groups came together to have an emergency picket at the federal building. The National Lawyers Guild has organized teams of lawyers. The United Church of Christ has taken on the economic support of the victims of these raids so they can be free to consult with their attorneys and prepare an adequate defense. In the short few days they have remaining before these grand juries are convened, the first subpoenas are for October 5th. And in addition, I think we're going to see the formation of broad civil liberties coalitions where every attempt is made to treat these cases as if they're a life and death question for the anti-war movement. Here in Connecticut, we're going to be hosting Connecticut United for Peace and the Council on American Islamic Relations, a civil liberties group born out of the Muslim American community. We're going to be hosting an October 30th day-long educational event. It will talk about the attacks on the civil liberties of Muslim Americans, which, of course, was a precursor to the attacks on the anti-war movement. And we are also going to be inviting key figures from the victims of these current raids in Minneapolis and Chicago. And we hope to educate hundreds and hundreds of people who will then become leaders of this fight to defend free speech and our right to political expression in the United States. There are a number of immediate steps people can take. This coming Monday, October 4th, is a national call-in day to Attorney General Eric Holder and President Obama to protest these raids and to demand that these subpoenas be dropped, that their materials be returned to them, computers, videos, cell phones, and whatever that had been seized be returned to them, and that the anti-war movement be free from this kind of harassment. Then on October 5th, there's a call for picket lines again around the country. That will probably be cities that weren't able to mount pickets this week will probably be there in that second round, and we'll go on for there. I expect national actions in the future, further coordinated regional actions, and very large meetings, teach-ins, and press conferences as we gather the forces for a successful civil liberties fight.
There is already the implication that a mistake was made and the FBI has done some slight backpedaling on other instances and is sort of trying to find the language to use now to define what happened. If we look at the newspaper Tuesday, September 28th, we see a small story, and it appears that many agents have cheated on their FBI exam. It seems that they engaged in some form of cheating or improper conduct, according to the DOJ. And the Office of the Inspector General there found agents and analysts had broken rules by consulting with others about their exam and using and sharing their answer sheets and, in some instances, using a computer system flaw to reveal the correct answers to questions. Now, this, they say, involves 22 people. But Inspector General Glenn Fine has added that he believes the extent of the cheating was greater than the cases detailed in their report. Can you just characterize what's happened in the sense of the FBI as you know it?
I think it's kind of a cute story, and I wonder if it's actually not thrown out to the world as a way to suggest, or at least sow doubt, that the actions in Minnesota and Chicago against the Columbia Solidarity Activists, Palestine Solidarity Activists, the Anti-War Committee, Freedom Road Socialist Organization, and so forth, the victims of the most recent raids, if this is just not an attempt to perhaps suggest that these raids were not deliberate, that they were the result of uneducated FBI officers or something like that. But the movement rejects that notion. We believe that that could lead to folks not taking this threat seriously. We don't really believe that raids of the magnitude that just took place in Minnesota and Chicago could have happened without the highest authority. And for that reason, we believe that the most vigorous response is necessary. We don't think it was a mistake. I think it's a deliberate act to intimidate and silence the anti-war movement. And we want to go on record to say that's not going to happen. We're going to mount ever larger actions against the absurd military intervention in Afghanistan, the drone attacks in Pakistan, the huge bases and continued combat operations in Iraq.
Chris Gavro of Cut Up, Connecticut United for Peace and Connecticut Socialist Action, one of many activists representing groups in Connecticut that are speaking out against the FBI raids on peace activists recently. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dory Smith. This program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut and syndicated nationally with Pacifica Network. Our website is talknationradio.org, and you can write to us at talknationradio@gmail.com. Underwriting for this broadcast is brought to you by JeremyRHammond.com, political analysis from outside the standard framework. He's founder and editor of foreignpolicyjournal.com and a recipient of the Project Censored 2010 Award. At JeremyRHammond.com, a review of the offers that the Taliban made to turn over Osama bin Laden and Pakistani efforts to get the U.S. to negotiate with the Taliban.